All right, let's engage in a little bit of review. It's unusual that we end a quarter and actually have some time to review, and I'm so thankful for that. And I want to begin this week with just some basic Bible review, and then we'll go into Genesis, since we've covered Genesis and Exodus the last two quarters. Try to review them, but just start off with a few really simple basics. How many books are in the Bible? 66 of those. And how many of those are in the Old Testament? 39, and that leaves how many for the New? 27. You know, interestingly enough, the Hebrew, you know, the Jews, they numbered the Old Testament a little differently. They only counted 22 books in it. They grouped, like the Minor Prophets as one group, 1st and 2nd Kings, one book, you know, several of the others that they combined. In what two languages was the Old Testament written? Hebrew and Aramaic. It's almost all Hebrew, except for what two books? What two books have the Aramaic in them? Daniel and Ezra. And that's, you know, it's interesting to kind of speculate on the exact reason. Both of them have lengthy sections of Aramaic. It's not other books, even like the book of Genesis, has reference an Aramaic word. You know, we might today in our speaking, we might throw in a word from another language that we know. You know, even Americans might sometimes say adios instead of goodbye. But I don't mean we're, you know, we've turned to Spanish. But those two books have lengthy sections of Aramaic, which is interesting. What language was the New Testament written in? The Greek language. And that's that is one of the fascinating to me parts of the story of the Bible is when the Old Testament closes, the predominant languages, you know, is Aramaic, really. It had become the language that what we would call the Middle East. But shortly after the close of the Old Testament, you know, there began to be these battles between the Persians and the Greeks. The Greek power was growing. But then, you know, around 330, Alexander the Great swept eastward, and the Greek language then just took over, and it became the dominant language. Its culture influenced, you know, so much. And that was foretold. We'll talk about that maybe a little later on. The Old Testament, well, let me ask you this real quick. What is the longest book in the Bible? It's a trick question. Everybody, Psalms has the most chapters, right? How many Psalms are there? 150. Jeremiah's actually the longest book, if you count pages, I believe. Y'all can count them. But it's just a little bit, it's longer than Isaiah, I know it's the longest of the prophets. But what is the shortest chapter in the Bible? That one's an easy, there's no disputing it. Shortest chapter. If you count now, I'll give you a hint. Count Psalms as chapters. Psalm 117. Psalm 117 only has two verses, so that makes it easier. Okay, think about the approach to the Old Testament. The book obviously falls into sections, and I think that it's important to see that and to kind of understand some of the chronology. The first five books of the Old Testament are sometimes referred to as the books of what? They're called the Pentateuch. They're the books of law. You know, sometimes called the Pentateuch, meaning the five books. But this is the revelation of God's law. Now, I know Genesis doesn't do much revealing of the law, but it's all building up to the covenant and the giving of the law. And so that's Genesis through Deuteronomy. Joshua through Esther, we sometimes refer to those as books of what? History. Yeah, that's, I mean, they tell the story of, you know, Israel's history from the time of the conquest till after the return from captivity. Chronology-wise, learn this. There are exceptions within books, but generally the chronology, it goes from Joshua to the end of 2 Kings in order. When you get to 1 Chronicles, going to the end of 2 Chronicles, you back up. You back up really to the time of David. 1 Chronicles largely ignores the reign of King Saul. I mean, it gives us less than one chapter about his reign. You know, but 1 Chronicles tells us about the reign of David. 2 Chronicles about Solomon and then the divided kingdom. Well, what 1 and 2 Chronicles do is they give us the same material that you've got in 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings. I say same material, same time frame. It's a different perspective in 1 and 2 Chronicles, but it's covering the same time frame. It's supplemental material to it. Samuel and Kings have a little different emphasis than do 1 and 2 Chronicles. But after Chronicles, we pick back up in chronological order through Ezra and Nehemiah. But the book of Esther probably belongs chronologically between Ezra 6 and 7. You know, as you study, and as we go through our studies, we're going to try to bring this out, but the Bible doesn't start at Genesis and go to Malachi in order. You know, there's some backing up. But after you come through Esther, you run into the five books that are sometimes called the books of what? Poetry or poetry and wisdom. You know, they deal with wisdom, you know, wise words for living. Proverbs is good advice. The Psalms is the singing and contemplations on life. And then you hit Isaiah. You could call the last 17 books just the books of prophecy, but typically they're divided into 5 and 12. The first 5 are called the major prophets, and then the last 12 are the minor prophets. They are not major and minor as importance, but the minor prophets are the much shorter books. You know, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, in particular, those are lengthy books. Daniel actually has fewer chapters than Hosea or Zechariah, two of the minor prophets, but if you look at the material, Daniel is lengthier. He's still a longer book than Hosea or Zechariah. What's the one major prophet that's not a prophet? Lamentations. If you're talking about the five major prophets, the books of the major prophets, Lamentations is in there. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, Daniel. Well, Lamentations is not a prophet. He belongs with Jeremiah, but that's where it's grouped. Then you have the 12 minor prophets. Just a few quickies. Which one of the minor prophets was married to Gomer? Hosea. And now, I don't want to embarrass anybody if you don't know these answers, but the five-year-olds in Bible drill know this, so you know you really want to make sure you answer if you know. Now, Gomer was married to Hosea, at least for a while. I'll give you all an easy one so you feel better about yourselves. Which minor prophet was swallowed by the big fish? Jonah. Where was he supposed to be going? Nineveh. Where was he headed? The other direction. It says he got on a ship for Tarshish, which either means he was going to Tarshish, or sometimes that word was used just to refer to any really ocean-going vessel. But he was getting away from there. And he was that. Which minor prophet foretold the place where the Christ would be born? And it was a prophecy so well known that when Herod called the scribes in and he says, "Where is he to be born, King of the Jews?" they immediately quoted from, that's close, Micah 5 and verse 2. Malachi and Micah sound a little alike. Micah. Micah was the prophet there. Another one, an easier one. Which minor prophet is quoted by Peter on the day of Pentecost? Joel, that is correct. Joel chapter 2. This is that which the prophet Joel. I'll go to easier questions in a second, but one last one from the minor prophets. Which minor prophet foretold the entry of Jesus into Jerusalem on the colt, the foal of a donkey? That'd be the next to last one. Zechariah. Zechariah chapter 9 in verse 9. Okay. I'll give you one more prophet question. What Old Testament prophet spoke of his soul, his body not seeing corruption, his soul not being left in Hades? David. Yeah. David, being a prophet, said these things. We don't think of him as a prophet, but that's what Peter calls him in Acts chapter 2. Okay, New Testament. We usually group this into four sections. Some say three. But the first four books are generally referred to as the Gospels, the life of Christ. You know, and then the second division, the book of Acts by itself, is referred to as the book of history. It is a book of conversion, sometimes people say, but that's the one history. Think about the Old Testament. There's a lot of history in the books of the law. There's a lot of history in the prophets, in some of them. But you've got the 12 books of history. In the New Testament, you've just got the one. The book of Acts that covers about 30 years or so of history. Stop and think about that. That the Old Testament, its history covers, you know, thousands of years. You know, even if you start with Abraham, which we can, you know, before that it's hard to, you know, assign a date, but we can look at Abraham and say somewhere around 2000 BC he lived. From Genesis 12 to Malachi, we cover about 1,600 years of history. The New Testament, you have the births of Jesus and John, and then those take place probably about 4 BC. But the book of history ends about AD 62. I'm not saying that a couple of the epistles weren't written a little later. I think they were. But, you know, and even in the New Testament, we've got the events right around the births of Jesus and John. We have the one incident when Jesus is 12. But the story of the New Testament, when you think about the history of it, is all really condensed. It's about a 30-year time period. From Pentecost to the end of Acts is only a little over 30 years. Okay. After the book of history, we have 22 what? letters, some, you know what the difference between an epistle and a letter is? An epistle sounds fancier. You have the 22 letters or epistles, the letters to Christians, and then the Revelation, sometimes referred to as a book of prophecy. It was a letter also, so you could count it there. Okay, y'all remember the 17 points of the Bible story? The first one is what? Before the flood, then we have the flood. Yes, very good. And then after the flood, God wanted them to fill the earth, but instead of doing that, they started building the Tower of Babel. So God had to come down, confuse their languages, and scatter the people. Out of the scattering of the people, he chose one man through whom he would bless all the nations. That man was whom? Abraham. And Abraham was the first of the four patriarchs. So we have before the flood, the scattering of the people, and the patriarchs. The four key patriarchs we talk about are Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph in the story of Genesis. Joseph gets sold down into Egypt, so the whole family moves to Egypt. And in the book we just studied, God brought them out of Egypt with the Exodus from Egypt. Now, when they came out of Egypt, where was God intending to take them? Well, I mean, he intended to take them to Mount Sinai and give the law. But following that, they were supposed to receive what? The land of Canaan. Land of Canaan. But because of unbelief, we have a period of the wandering in the wilderness. But the wandering in the wilderness eventually ended. Under Joshua, we had the the invasion and conquest of Canaan. The invasion and conquest of Canaan under Joshua. They divide the land, but following Joshua's death, the people fell away, got into trouble, and had to be delivered by the judges. The first judge, of course, was Othniel, but the last judge, the one most significant to this, was what man? Samuel. And when Samuel got old, the people came and said, "You are old. Your sons aren't like you." They said, "Give us what? A king." And kings reign over kingdoms. So, following the judges, we have the what? United Kingdom. The United Kingdom, which is reigned over first by Saul, then David, and then Solomon. Okay? Solomon's great mistake was doing what? Marrying all these foreign women. He did wrong in the multiplying of wives. I mean, he married, had 700 wives, or 300 concubines. But it also specifically notes in 1 Kings 11 that he married the women from the foreign nations and they turned his heart away. So when you think of Solomon, you think of a man that said his heart was not loyal to God. He had a divided heart, which means after his death, the United Kingdom became the divided kingdom. All right, this divided kingdom with, what do we call the nation in the north? Israel. The kingdom in the south was Judah. Who was the first king over Judah? Rehoboam, the son of Solomon. But who's the first king over Israel? Jeroboam. Now, God made Jeroboam a promise. He said, "You obey me, keep my laws, my covenant. I will establish your kingdom. Your sons will reign after you." But Jeroboam gets worried because what was down in the territory of Rehoboam? The worship place, the temple. And he said, if they go down to Jerusalem to worship, they're going to turn back to Rehoboam. God had said, "Obey me and I'll establish you." Well, Jeroboam lacks faith in that. So what does he do? He puts golden calves where? Dan and Bethel. Dan was, I mean, you look on a map, and you'll see a little pinky finger right there. No, it is at the far north of Israel. Bethel was just right on the border. He made it convenient. He made it where nobody would have to go into Judah. They could stop. I mean, if you were up north, short trip. If you were in the middle or the south, well, you would have had to pass Bethel to get to Jerusalem. But God wasn't pleased. And so Israel went into captivity, and that left us with Judah alone. But Judah alone, they don't remain faithful to the Lord. They don't keep His Sabbaths. They worship idols. They are cruel and oppressive. And so who comes along and deals with them? The Babylonians. And so they go into the Babylonian captivity. Which prophet foretold the length of the Babylonian captivity? Jeremiah. How long did Jeremiah say they'd be in captivity? 70 years. But the 70 years eventually ended, and so they came back in the return and rebuilding. I would like to encourage you to remember, it's not just a return. They come back, because it's a big part of the story, the rebuilding. They first come back, and what's the charge they have to rebuild? It's the first part of Ezra. It's the focus of the book of Haggai, first part of Zechariah. They got to rebuild the temple. Rebuild that temple. And they get the temple rebuilt. But they don't rebuild the walls for a time. What great man comes back, leaves his job in Persia, and comes back and inspires the rebuilding of the walls? Nehemiah. Nehemiah leads them in the rebuilding. When I talk about the rebuilding, though, I like to emphasize they were rebuilding the temple, then the walls, but there was also an ongoing effort at spiritual rebuilding led by Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, Ezra, Nehemiah, these great spiritual leaders. But you know, and a lot of people have trouble learning this lesson. I among them. When you've said all you have to say, what should you do? You should stop talking. Yeah, that's, there are a lot of folks that they keep talking long after they've run out of what they know to talk about. But God doesn't do that. And God, through Haggai and Zechariah and Malachi, through Ezra and Nehemiah, He has said what He has to say, and we enter a 400-year period of what? Of silence. But sometimes it can be a very profitable study to take a look at some of the historical developments during those 400 years of silence. You don't have to be the kind that learns every detail of everything that happened in those 400 years. But the prophet Daniel spoke about those years. He gave some fairly detailed prophecies about those years. And to learn a little bit about how those were fulfilled and developed, I think it can help to strengthen faith. And it helps you appreciate the background of the New Testament. I mentioned earlier that by the first century, we had the Greek language being spoken. Well, Daniel had foretold the rise of the male goat that would overthrow the kingdom of the Medes and Persians. And, he tells about the rapid spread. And he also, in chapter 11, particularly, details some of the battles that would happen that I think even prophesied the coming of the Maccabeans, but that's for another time. The years of silence, though, end, And as we've already said, the first four books of the New Testament are about the what? The life of Christ. And during his life, he promised he would build what? His church. And so, after the life of Christ, we have the early church. The early church, originally guided by the apostles and prophets, it came to be guided by the letters to Christians. Those are the 17. Next week, or Wednesday night, and probably next week too, we're going to do those 17 again. I won't take as long to go through them, but we're going to go through them again. Let's see if we can go through them fast. But like I say, not too fast, you know. Before the flood, scattering of the people, patriarchs, Exodus from Egypt, wandering in the wilderness, invasion and conquest of Canaan, Judges, United Kingdom, Divided Kingdom, Judah alone, return and rebuilding, years of silence, life of Christ, early church, and letters to Christians. Okay. I hope that's 17. If that wasn't 17, I left something out. you know, one day I did the books of the Bible with the kids, and they said, "You don't like Thessalonians anymore?" sometimes it happens. Okay, book of Genesis, the great book of beginnings. What happened on first day of creation? God created the universe, and then he said, "Let there be light." When God said, "Let there be light," what happened? There was light. You know, that's one of the great let there be light, and there was light. When God said it, it happened. On the second day, what does God divide? The waters above and the waters below. He creates the firmament, the space, you know, the air. Third day, what appears? The dry land. That's right. We get the dry land. And we also get what? What happens on the land? We get the plants. Plants. Day four. Sun, moon, and stars. Remember the 3 and 3 correspondence? On the first day, let there be light. On the fourth day, 3 days later, sun, moon, and stars. Second day, dividing the water above from the water below, creating the space, the firmament. And so on the fifth day, we get the sea creatures in the water below. We get the birds of the air that he's created. Third day, the dry land appears, the plants. And so 3 days later, he creates the animals and the people to live on the land and to eat the plants. And so those are the days of creation. What happens on the seventh day? God rests. When is the first time we read of man keeping a Sabbath? When they were in the wilderness, Exodus 16, when God gave them the manna, it's the first time it specifically talks about people keeping the Sabbath. God links the Sabbath, the seventh day being the Sabbath day of rest, he links it to his creative process that he rested on the seventh. But we never read of people keeping that Sabbath rest until Israel has come out of Egypt and, in Nehemiah, he makes mention of it being revealed at Sinai. So, the Sabbath Those who insist that we should be worshiping on the Sabbath will say the Sabbath is as old as mankind. It goes back to creation. That's one of those statements that's got truth and error both. It is true that God rested at the very beginning. But it's false to say that man has kept the Sabbath from the beginning. If man kept the Sabbath from the beginning, we have no indication of it. And every indication in Exodus is that God's having to teach them what this Sabbath is about and teach them why they will rest on the seventh day. It gives every appearance of something new to them. But in chapter 2 of Genesis, just kind of, and you can follow along, I don't care, it's an open book test. He puts the man and the woman in the garden. He creates them, chapter 1. Chapter 2, he said, let's go back and let's look in detail at the creation. And he created the man first out of what? The dust of the earth. Then he created the woman out of what? Rib. Yeah, been a thorn in his side ever since, right? Is that? No, that's not what, not at all. Janet's not here this morning, see? No. And y'all will lie about it. Y'all will make it sound worse. He made the man, the woman out of the man to signify what he was about to say about the two shall become one flesh. She was taken out of his flesh and the two would become as one flesh. Can you think of four places in the New Testament where that one flesh is quoted? A couple of Matthew 19, that's probably the easiest, most commonly thought of. What's the parallel to Matthew 19? It's in Mark. It's between 9 and 11. 10, yes, Mark 10. There are two other places the statement about the two becoming one flesh are quoted. What's that? 1 Corinthians 6. And the others? Christ and the church, the husband and wife. Ephesians 5. You know, that those four, and there may be, I may be, you know, not thinking of another, but that's quoted repeatedly. Jesus says, and I don't want us to ever forget this, the pattern for marriage was set in the very beginning when God made one male, one female, and said the two are to be joined together, become one flesh. And as he would say in Matthew, what God's joined together, let not man separate. No mention of divorce. You know, he said, stay together. Well, chapter 3, we have the fall of man. And who instituted this fall? The serpent, which later we find it was not just some animal, but who was operating in the form of the serpent? Satan. And because of their sin, what was the serpent told would happen to him? He'd go on his belly and eat dust, which is to say, be humiliated. But then what would happen to his head? It would be bruised by the seed of whom? Woman. Don't ever forget what an unusual, unique expression that is. You know, sometimes truths are given in these little glimpses. There are these glimpses. When he says in Genesis 3:15 that the seed of woman would bruise the head of the serpent just as the serpent would bruise the heel of him, you know, we may read that and not think much about it, except that seed is always associated with the father, with the male, the man's seed. Here he talks about the seed of woman. Why would he say that? You know, it would be thousands of years before we would realize. You know, and Isaiah would give another hint. The virgin shall conceive and bear a child. You know, and that there would come one who was not the seed of man. You know, and yet he would be the seed of Abraham. Same time. Yeah. He had them thinking. He had them thinking. What did God do to the ground because of man's sake? He cursed it. Then he drove them from the garden. And let's not forget, as we're tying it all together with Exodus, what did he place at the garden? Cherubim. Cherubim and the flaming sword that kept them from coming back and eating of what? The tree of life. And then they had children. The two that are named first are who? Cain and Abel. Whether these were the two oldest, we're not told. That would seem to be the implication. But Cain ends up killing Abel, being driven away. And who was the replacement son for Abel? Seth. And then in chapter 5, you've got the generations. And there's some interesting things in there. They lived really, really long lives. Who lived the longest recorded life? Methuselah. Which one never died? Enoch. You know, and who's the one other person in the Bible that will never die? Elijah. You know, we have Enoch here, and of course, not like he, you know, got cut down in the prime of his life. He was 365 when he was no more. Chapter 6, the flood comes. The flood comes because of man's great wickedness. And yet, what man found grace in the eyes of the Lord? Noah. And Noah was saved along with how many sons? Three, and they were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And then those four men and their wives, which is interesting that each one only had one wife, but they built the ark, made it out of what? Gopher wood. It was a ding dong. Okay. If you don't know how long, high, and wide the ark was, let me just give you a hint. You better be ready for Wednesday night, because that was the question about to come out of my mouth. But anyway, all right, we will continue through Genesis, and you know, but we're also going to do those 17 again.